Yo, people, it's Post, it's Thoughts and Akali. This week, I'm joined by a pioneer, one of the most driven businessmen in the fashion industry. Such an articulate mind. Had a lot of fun on this one. Watched a full interview on GRM Daily. Enjoy. Yes.
Yo, what's happening?
Big Reese.
You good?
What's happening, brother? How you good. Doing? You good?
You good? Right,
it's an honor, man.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. You know, there's a rapper, his name's Tricky. And when I was younger, he had this line. It was like, me and my niggas, that's a mill in the room. And when I was younger, I used to look at my friends in the room, I'd be like, yeah, we're like 300,000. 400,000, but see now that you're in my car, you know, you've done incredibly well for yourself. I want to get people to know a bit more about you because I feel like you're very misunderstood personally. But I feel like people just sometimes have just gone off something that you may have said on Twitter and then based their whole perception of you from that. But when you take time out to really listen to the things that you have to say, I think that you're an incredible businessman and person. So I wanted to get to know a bit more about you.
I feel like that misconception has been the same since a kid, you know. Everything was centered around women or style or being a man in school. So people would kind of like make up a rumor and hold on to it just to paint me as a bad person or to downplay what I was doing at the time. So yeah, like I said, it's been that way for 20 years, you know what I'm saying? So
you've never really minded that?
Nah. I've lived in London for what? 3-4 years now, and I've never experienced a single moment of hate. It's normally like a level of awe or respect. People would say, I read your tweets, you've changed my life, or you changed the way I think, or I've watched your journey for 10 years, you know what I'm saying? So what, you know, hate is allowed, and you know, people who admire you are quiet, and the people who admire you or on a path of progress, they're just doing their thing, you know. They're not gonna come and jump to defend me, so I get that, but like I said, the real world is where it matters.
Do you feel like, although that you've kind of, it might not have been your intention at times in terms of some of your tweets, for example, obviously none of us are perfect, do you feel like maybe some of them you could have communicated a little bit better, or do you stand by most of your tweets?
I stand by.
You stand everything, by all your tweets,
of course, you know, everything can be interpreted in two ways or many ways, I guess.
Yeah.
But I never say anything to kind of like, you know, rile it up. And being smart, I kind of know the smart people are going to see it one way and the people who want to create a narrative are going to take something the other way. And even all of the people who chirp up online, and I guess this irritates me a little bit. When I go to my DMs, more often than not, they've sent me a DM in the past saying, your inspiration or love what you're doing. Because I don't really check them too often or I see them late, by the time I've seen them or checked in and seen someone hating, I looked on my Insta to see if they messaged me, they've deleted it or it just says message request, you understand? So
yeah.
I understand that most people are kind of like fans turned hate because I don't probably engage with them how they want me to engage with them, or I just don't see. And I guess because I'm very to myself as a person, I just do my thing and mind my own business. And because people don't get to see me in the flesh, it allows them to run away with a narrative. But a lot of people in the industry, they know me on a personal level. And, I've, you know, all of the people that are somebody, they've either been to my house or we've spoken out throughout the years. But like I said, they're not the people who are going to come and run to defend me because they know me as a person anyway.
What's your relationship been like with UK music in terms of what you've done in the fashion world?
When I first started the brand, obviously the brand was like a completely different direction to what it is now, because I'm, 32 now? I was 22 when I started the brand. And when I started, it was obviously, I was playing football at the time. I was just wearing tracksuits to training every day. So, you know, that's what type of products I was making. I wanted to make, it was kind of like inspired by the Ricardo Tisci Givenchy era, which was like the Watch the Throne era. I remember going to the concert thinking, yo, these outfits are crazy. And that was a big inspiration for me at the time. So I kind of wanted to make very like black leather, you know, the contrast in fabrics, but being primarily monochrome. So I was making tracksuits at the time. So I remember, I think it was Fecky and did the Don't Waste My Time video. So
yeah.
I remember it was like Fecky, Scraps 9, Crept, yeah. Them man all showed love early doors. So I remember like just sending out a few things to them at the time. And then, yeah, I remember Fecky and might have been Crept too, I'm not sure, but definitely Fecky, he was rocking the clothes in the video. And obviously that was that track, I think, was still a big track, to be honest, but that was quite a moment for UK and the crossover to America. And they're my type of guys as well, you know, like kind of old school, being what, 32, like as much as I respect the new rap scene in UK and US, it's not really my type of thing. So like the Scrapses and the Nines and the old school, you know, kind of like live by like the old code and principles. They're my type of guys.
And I know like you're a big Jay-Z fan. I think you are a big Jay-Z fan. I think I've seen like some pictures of some artwork and stuff that you've had. So I'm pretty sure that you drew some inspiration from him and some of his successes.
For sure, yeah.
As we all have. But in terms of like British, core British music, who would you say has been your favorite artist from here?
Scraps and Nines, man. You know, they keep it 100, and you can see that. And I live by that old school. I'm a man of principle. So I try and lay low, focus on doing what I need to do. Again, young black men, we want to shine too. So, you know, we all do that as well naturally. Obviously, it's always a problem when I do that. But yeah, I'm just like, I like the old school people who I know. There's no lies in their raps. There's no lies in their bars, and they live what they talk. And again, I think in the modern world, a lot of people are influenced by people who aren't really living what they talk about. And that's very relevant in rap mostly. And it's kind of like a virus, you know, because it kind of makes people stretch themselves too far, and it costs them down the line. So I feel like whilst I'm not saying Scraps and Nines, you know, that at the end of the day, they were drug dealers. So I'm not saying that's the best influence, but at least what they were saying is what they lived, and it wasn't telling you to do something that they wasn't doing.
And, you know, like, I think in one of your tweets before, I feel like you said that you wasn't black enough for black people or white enough for white people. But obviously, not if I hadn't seen that tweet, for example, I feel like you're part of our culture, if that makes any sense. Do you feel like you're part of black British culture?
The thing is with me, what people get twisted is I grew up in Quinton, which is quite a, you know, troubled place in Birmingham. So my school that I grew up with, I went to school with Sturridge, Daniel Sturridge, etc. So that school was called Four Dwellings. It's 80% black. When I was, I think it was 13, 14, I moved to a predominantly white area. That's where I met Lewis and Ben and Reese, who are my white friends, who obviously the business owners of Gymshark, Able, etc. That side of my upbringing gets missed because they only want to see who they see. I don't take pictures and I don't post my friends as such. So I think people don't want to class me as black, which is cool. I don't mind, like I said, but they completely forget where I'm from and where I was raised.
Because we wouldn't know that, if that makes any sense.
As in,
you see how some people might... The people that you're talking about that don't see you as being that, for example, like that's not on our radar, if that makes any sense. As in, if I was taking you on face value, didn't know nothing about you, and I saw you and I knew, okay, my man owns this, I'd be like, raw, like he's doing.
I think that's the thing, though. So when you see me on face value, I may not talk the same in terms of, you know, speak highly slang or what people typically define as black, which is wrong in the first place, but that's just the name of the game. I don't dress the same as most people who in UK culture would define as part of the culture. And I guess also in terms of achievements, when you get to a certain height, they rule you out anyway. But like I said, I'm a businessman. I'm here to not make money at all costs, but to make money ultimately. And take the path that makes sense for the future of the business and, you know, the future trajectory to stay relevant. Because in fashion, as everybody knows, to stay relevant for 10 years is a mammoth task, and to stay relevant for 20 is an even harder task. So I've always just took the path which made sense for the business. But like I said, because people don't see me in certain events and, you know, whatnot, I can understand why it's easy to say, oh, he's not part of us. And again, that's fine. I have no issues with that.
So you probably experience it more because you live your day-to-day life. But I think the biggest misconception about you or people think at times is that he's rich and moody, or he's rich or he's rich and angry, basically. Which, by the way, in my head, yeah, there's way more worse things to be. I'll be quite honest, like, I've been one of those people before I've known you to think, oh, this guy is rich, but he's moody. Mm-hmm. Like, not in a super, oh, this guy's rich and he's moody, hateful way, but I'll be like, oh, this guy's rich and moody, man. Why is he rich and moody? Like, but the more I thought about it, yeah, I thought, hold on, first of all, this ain't even the worst thing you can be in life. And secondly, who says just because you're rich means that you lose the ability to be moody?
You know what it is? Because now most people of influence, their characters are very easy to see. They do a lot of podcasts. You know, that you can see who they are. And I've always, like I said, I've always tried to stay away from that kind of hype. Like, I'll do one podcast a year, or if someone reaches out to me like yourself, and I respect, and also I want to support you, I'll partake. But I don't do YouTube videos. I never did a day in the life. Even the business, you don't know how much I do in the business, because it's never been about me. It's always about, it'll do your job, focus on your fundamentals and run it up, you understand? So that's just the way I like it anyway, because I feel like if you look at the top celebrities in the world now, the very top ones, you don't really know them. And that's the celebrity nature. And again, I'm not trying to reverse engineer that, or that's how I think, but that's how it should be. And you know what's mad? Half the time, the personality people portray anyway is an act, until you meet them up close and you go, hold on a minute, you're a nice bubbly girl or guy on your YouTube channel, but you're actually an asshole in person.
I want to focus on your achievements for a second. Obviously, as I said before, you know, everyone knows that you used to play a bit of football. You wasn't the highest paid footballer ever. I assume that at your height, you were getting about 3K a week at some point. Things didn't work out, and you started to build your own business, and you got a couple partners at the time. Lewis and Ben, I believe, at the time, right? What's the correlation between the two brands? As in, like, they were part of Gymshark at its inception as well, or how did that work?
You mean MDV? So when I moved, like I said, from Birmingham to Bromsgrove, Lewis was like, I remember the first day of school, I remember there was a half a basketball court anyway. I picked up the ball and I took a half court shot, which was obviously not a full court, but half court for them. And I've hit the shot first time. And I remember Lewis came to me and he was like, yo, I need you as my friend. And me and him have been friends since that day, and I was, 13, 14 years old. When I was 19, I believe, I think that's when they started Gymshark. And at the time, it was like a supplements
website. So who started Gymshark?
Lewis and Ben.
Okay, cool.
So it was a supplements website, and of course, I didn't think nothing of it at the time. And they was drop shipping. There was this white labeling, a protein powder, calling it Gymshark powder. But it didn't really work, so then those two kind of like started to go to the gym quite heavy. And then there was a time that stringer vests were really a thing. And I think the only stringer vest they could find was Gold's Gym. And I don't know how much they cost, but I remember they saying they were too expensive for a piece of fabric with a print on. So they just decided, yo, let's just make a logo and put Gymshark on it. And I remember at the time they just moved, I think it was 2 years, and they moved to like a small unit. And I remember going, and at the time I was earning, yeah, as you said, 2K a week. So I had some money, you know, nothing major. But I remember saying to them, like, yo, if you need any money, just let me know. Not like even as an investment, just to like help out. They said, nah, it's cool, we'll just build slowly. And then that was the start of it. And then I think in the fourth year, so I remember Lewis coming to me and saying, like, you dress a certain type of way, and you know, you need to just do something in fashion. So at the time, Lewis and Ben were tight. They were business partners, and obviously they're no longer tight, but I didn't really have any relationship with Ben. Like, Ben went to the same school, but we just didn't speak. That was Lewis's. In fact, Lewis didn't even speak to him too much in school. I think they kind of came acquaintances through going to the gym and then having this kind of mutual idea.
When you left to play football, basically they got tighter kind of thing.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
So Louis said, yeah, do something in fashion, you know, you dress a certain type of way. So I was like, all right, cool, let's do it. He was like, oh, I need to bring Ben in now. And I was like, why? Like, me and Ben don't even chat. He was like, I know, but we made an agreement that every business venture we're going to do, we're going to bring each other in. I was like, all right, cool, I have to respect it. So that was the case of why Ben was brought in. And initially it was 33% each. I'm thinking it's going to be nothing. So I'm just like, whatever, I'm playing ball. Yeah, I'll make a couple designs and, you know, I'll make the ideas and whatever. So actually the only thing that was beneficial was that they had a warehouse at the time because they was obviously selling clothes. So I had like a wall in their warehouse. But then very quickly, obviously we launched, hence why the shares changed. It changed from 33% each to 66% to me and 17% each for them. Because obviously they acknowledge and fair play to them for doing that because they didn't have to. They acknowledge that, yo, I'm doing everything and then they have no interest. And then I think a few years later, Ben always said to me, I'll sell your shares, the remaining 17% to you because I don't care, basically. So I bought Ben shares off him. So that took me up to 83%. And then,
would I be prying too much if I asked how much you purchased them back for at that time?
I think it was like 300,000. So, okay. But that was what? Jesus, seven years ago, maybe two, three years in.
How much is that worth now, just for context? Roughly at the low end.
I think we did last year 7 million profit, 10x on that, which is like the lowest multiplier you'll get in fashion. So what's that 70 mil, 17% on that, 10% is what? 7 million, 1% is, call it 10 mil.
10 mil.
Again, that's easy to say in hindsight because—
Of course. It's not relative, but it just gives—
Yeah.
An easier understanding of where the business is at now mm-hmm. and where it was at then.
Yeah.
That must have hurt at the time too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you must have thought, ouch.
Yeah, it did 100%. Because like, I think, 3 years into business, I would have still been playing ball. I probably would have took a pay cut. I would have been at like a Doncaster or Barnsley where I was earning like 1K a week. Actually, I took a management buyout loan from the bank. So it was more than everything I had at the time. So that's me trying to say, like, I'm all in. I believe in what I'm going
to
do.
And what made you care that much, though, at that point, to buy that 17% when you already had 66%?
I think, first of all, business is never guaranteed. And one thing about me is I'm always going to bet on myself heavily because I know that my discipline is abnormal, especially if the variables I can control. Again, business, you can't control all the variables, but you can control a good amount. Of course, we can't control the economy. We can't control whether someone likes your stuff, but that's my job to kind of understand what people want and give it to them. But it was a risk all the way through. I remember my dad not speaking to me for a long time when I stopped playing football because he thought I was insane. Obviously, being from a Nigerian household, it's books, university lawyer, or, you know, sometimes football. And again, I understand it from everybody's perspective because at that time, you know, the business would have been doing, I don't know, 3-4 million turnover, probably like, you know, 10-20% profit on that. So between 300,000 to 700,000 profit, which is a lot of money, obviously, but like in football in terms, 700,000 a year, if you play Premier League, is not a lot of money. So that was probably my dad's logic. And who would have thought, maybe myself included to a point, it would have gone on to the heights it's gone on to now. So hindsight's a wonderful thing. But even the share purchase, it could have easily just, the business could have gone backwards and I would have been in the red, understand?
Of course, you really took a risk on yourself at that point. So you bought the shares back
mm-hmm.
and then I guess it was just you and Lewis left in that company,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
When he was still involved in Gymshark, for example, and you was in your brand with him,
mm-hmm.
like, why is he still part of that? Why did you want to keep him in there still now?
I tried to buy his shares on many occasions, even before he exited Gymshark. And he said to me, he was like, again, Lewis knows me as good as anybody on this earth. And he knows what I'm capable of. And he knows my level of intelligence or discipline. He knows all of those factors. So he's always like, well, if I'm going to bet on you too. So why would I sell my shares? And I completely understand that. The last time I spoke to him about buying the shares was many years ago. So I'm going to say 5 years ago. And obviously, again, the brand's grown a lot in that period. And in that time period as well, he's also had two exits from Gymshark, one for a smaller amount and one for £100 million. So me buying his shares of him now it's not going to touch the sides. So it's he might as well leave the business when I leave the business. And that makes perfect sense. If I was him, I'd do the same thing. So if he hadn't had Exit Gymshark, or he hadn't had another business venture, which was obviously an anomaly, which Gymshark is, I'm sure he would have sold his shares, because the finances that I would have been able to offer would have changed his life, but it won't now.
It could almost be a film, because it's very, very, very rare that you find people that have known each other, gone to the same school as each other, and build multi-million pound clothing brands.
No. It should be a movie. If you look at the picture from the outside, you think this school must have been a private school, or this school must have been a school for entrepreneurs. This was like a council estate school. I'm not going to talk about my friends' upbringings, but they had hard upbringings, like parents, you know, moving crazy. So then there's Reese owns Able. Lewis invested into Able as well. That's doing 40 million a year too. So all of us are, you know, doing well in the business world. But I remember actually speaking to Lewis and Reese on many occasions. Reese was going to go into the army. He was this close to going into the army. I'm sure he will share that story at some point. Lewis was in university, and I remember going to, when I was at my dad's house, he was like, I just want to get a job that pays 40K a year and I'll be happy. It wasn't even in our minds really that we could go onto the heights we've gone on to, but I guess it goes to show, like, just having friends who have the same mindset can spur you on, because if Gymshark hadn't have gone to do what he's done, I wouldn't have started MDV. If MDV or Gymshark hadn't gone and done to do what he's done, Reese wouldn't have started Able.
Able, yeah, yeah.
So I feel like a big thing in life is once you can see something's possible by someone you know, you feel like you can crack the code too.
So you said you're still cool with Reese, Lewis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, oh, it's the three of you. Yeah, yeah. But what, you don't speak to Ben anymore?
I never really did.
Okay.
I never really did. And I think it's kind of public, the breakup between Lewis and Ben and Gymshark. And
that some of us don't know in this demographic. What was that?
Gymshark took off like 6 years into its inception when they hired the CEO called Steve Hewitt. Steve was like doing some advisory work for Gymshark at the time, and he was very good. He came from Reebok. And I remember Lewis asking me like, oh, Steve wants 5% of the business. What should I do? And I said, you know, if you do that, you're going to put yourself in a weak position, because obviously there's three shareholders and you have to dilute. And if Ben and Steve, or you and Steve, come together and decide to, you want one person out the door, you're out the door. And that's what happened effectively. And obviously there was no real reason why. Lewis is a flamboyant personality, but that same flamboyant personality got them to that point, you understand? So when they decided that they wanted to start being corporate and, you know, no laughs and jokes and just straight business, and that's when, you know, Lewis kind of got pushed out the door. Nevertheless, I actually was meeting Steve on the motorway to broker Lewis's first exit, which was a smaller amount. And of course, I didn't get nothing off it. It's my friend. So this was a 7-figure amount, and the second exit was a 9-figure amount. But I remember in lockdown, I offered him 20 million for his shares remaining, 20%, something like that. And I remember Lewis calling me on a freeway phone in lockdown with Reese, saying, what should I do? And I was just like, look, forget about that. 20 mil is no chance. They're doing, at this time, Gymshark's moving mad. So they're doing like 30 mil profit, you understand, and they're growing crazy. And I said to him on the phone, yo, don't assume that this trajectory is going to continue, because business don't work like that. It's your baby, you're holding on to it. Again, I understand someone's ripped it from you, but you can't fight a business making this type of money with, you know, you just can't fight. So I said, look, if I can get 100 mil, would you take it? Yes. 100 mil was wired in 2 weeks. I remember him sending me a screenshot, 100 mil cash just in the bank.
And but you brokered that?
It wasn't much broken. It wasn't like it needed to be. I'm his friend, and they wanted to get him out, and he wanted to get out. And now looking back, it looks like the best deal ever, because Gymshark is not what it once used to be. They're growing fast, but they're effectively buying revenue. Their gross margin's always dropping. The profit's always dropping. So if he was to try and do the same deal today, he would get way less.
Where does all your knowledge from business come from? Because like you said, you was a football player, you started your own business, but it feels like, you know, speaking to you, listening to you sometimes, it feels like you've really like read a lot of books, or I don't know, you feel like an old soul when it comes to business.
Look, 10 years is a long time. So if you're actually, you know, skin in the game and 100% every single day, you learn from your own mistakes, and you also learn from mistakes of others. So my business knowledge is always stemmed from the long term. What sticks around, and why does it stick around? And on the contrary, why is this business no longer around? Or why is this person no longer relevant?
What are some of the companies that have potentially taught you that lesson in the fashion world that came and they've gone? Because I've got a lot of examples in my field.
No one in particular, and it would be probably unfair to name names anyway, but even if you look at the big brands, they're hot for 5 minutes, and then, I'm not talking the luxury brands, but you know, like you might get the mid-tier brands, they're not gonna last. The business model is flawed. And when a business model is flawed and you can't adapt or recreate yourself, you're destined to fail eventually. And obviously things take longer than you expect normally to collapse. People hang on for longer than you think. That's just human nature, survival instinct. But I just think you can't fake it for long, you understand, and that's life. Anyone who's trying to front, they'll get found out. And obviously now from a distance, no one can tell who is who. That's a J-bar, but everybody looks the same. Everyone's got a nice whip, everyone's got a nice watch. Everybody can't be shining. It doesn't work like that. The 1% of wealth is always going to be the 1% wealth, and probably even more concentrated now with the economy. So how can everybody seem to be shining? And I think most of it comes from people's expectations are so high. I was reading something recently, and it was saying like in the 50s, they said that was the like golden time of happiness. But the truth is, everybody almost had the same standard of living. Everybody's house looked identical. Everybody was pushing the same car. So nobody looked across your street and saw your neighbor with a shiny new thing. So you didn't get unhappy and think that you're not doing it. And I think the problem is now the bar is always raising. I was speaking to my boy the other day, and I was like, you know, do you know how mad it is now that you could have a Rolls Royce and nobody cares? Not to say that people should care, but I remember I was growing up, I saw an M3 and I was like, no way, BMW M3, like. But now M3s are like, yo, forget that. You pick up girl up in an M3, she don't rate you, which is crazy. Whereas if you pick a girl in a Rolls Royce, she's already been in one. She's been in three. And yeah. I think that change in standards and expectation is what's making people severely unhappy. And furthermore, what's even more mad is that the people who have these expectations can't even provide that for themselves. So yeah. you have this level of, I want this bag, this crib, this car. And this is men and women too. And you're judging someone with less, but you can't even afford that less. I think that's insane.
I agree. And it's kind of like nothing's ever good enough anymore. No. You know, that girl that you've probably picked up in the Rolls Royce has probably been on a private jet
100%.
Once. Or do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, there's nothing that is out of anyone's reach in terms of experience.
No, it's crazy.
Sometimes.
Even though I have nice things, and as like everyone, if you work hard, you deserve to buy them, but I never let them rule me. I think that might be a misconception from afar, and I completely understand why, because not that I post a lot, but if I post, I'm shining, you understand? But that's the whole point of social media, you know, like show people what you're moving with. I actually live what I move with, that's the difference. But I completely understand why people have this connotation of he's materialistic, but what people forget is, I always say this to people, is it's relative. So if I purchase a car and someone else purchases a car, that car may have been light work to me, but someone may have killed themselves to me. So it's all relative. But what I do is, even though I like these things, I don't care about them at all. So yeah. You'll never hear me talk in an open conversation about, yeah, I just bought this. You might just see me with it. What I actually look forward to is waking up in the morning, having a coffee, going to my office or reading or learning something new. Coming home, I find my home is my place of peace. So when I'm at home, I'm happy. You know, as long as I've got my laptop, a book I'm reading, and I can learn, and I can have a shisha, I'm happy.
Talking about shining, what's the most expensive thing you've ever bought?
The store. Yeah, for sure. But obviously, personally, it's cars, isn't it?
What's the most expensive car you bought then?
Probably the Spectre, which comes in a few weeks.
So what's the worst investment you've ever made?
I've not really made too many bad decisions, to be honest, and I guess that's why I'm still here, you understand? Of course, you can make like bad stock purchases, but you learn from them. You can only make them once. And again, even if we're talking clothing, for example, even if I think this jacket's going to be the best jacket I've ever made and I've bought 1,000 of them, and let's say the cost of it's £40 landed, that's only a £40,000 out if you sell zero, you understand? So in fashion, it's quite difficult unless you're talking about fixed fixed assets or fixed costs, it's very difficult to make mistakes that can kind of take you down. I think with business, predominantly the mistakes people make are getting big shiny offices which cost you millions a year, maybe retail in the wrong place, hiring too many staff, because obviously, you know, if you've got 500 staff all on average of 50k, that adds up. But I guess you can make people redundant, but that's always something that I've never wanted to do. I've never actually made a single person redundant. Even during COVID, I didn't put nobody on furlough because I didn't want people to feel like their job was on the line, do you understand? So I've always, with those kind of fixed costs or where people are concerned, I've always been very calculated, and I've always kind of stretched the operation side as long as possible to kind of not have to commit to make that fixed cost. Or at least when we do make that fixed cost, we're more than ready for it financially.
Let's just say you was on a boat, you're in the middle of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
There's one space in the boat, you can only save one brand. There's Trapstar in the ocean, there's Benjart in the ocean. You have to save one brand.
You know what, I'm super cool with both of them, but I have to say, yeah, Jerome, because yeah, me and him have been cool for 12 years. I was with him in Dubai last year, actually, but he's always been a real one. So just because me and him are tighter, Jerome, but Mikey's super cool too.
That question wasn't for the purposes of segregation the brands. We're championing them both. It was just a bit of entertainment because I wanted to know which jacket you might wear first.
Oh, you're talking clothing?
Yeah, of course. We love the people.
I don't know. I think they're both different. I actually spoke about this in Dubai with Jerome. I was like, because he was talking about, you know, the lanes to go in and the direction to go in. And I said, you know what? I see Benjart more as like the grown trapper. You understand? The 30 plus trapper or the 30 plus guy who grew up in the hood. And I think I said to him, you need to own that lane. I see Scraps wearing it frequently. And I said, he makes sense. He's your perfect business advocate. Whereas I guess Trapstar, they still have that demographic, but they're more with the youth. So like, if I have to choose based on that, I'm going to say I'm over 30. So I'm going to go Benjart.
Obviously, you've had a bit of back and forth. It's well known with the CEO of Cortez. Where do you think those kind of things stem from? Like with him in particular?
So there was a tracksuit that we made and... you know, at the time, I didn't even know what Cortez was. So long story short, I had a new buyer and a new designer. We've had like a brief of the products that we want to make in like 6 months time because we work so far ahead. One of the new designers who came from Daily Paper, I believe, he showed me a tracksuit that was from Bape and it had the logo placement on the crotch. So I said to him, all right, cool, show me some designs. And I was like, but because obviously it has to be a patch because that's, it can't just be a logo across your finger, it has to be on a patch to kind of sit properly. Actually, he came up with like a paramount inspiration of a mountain. He was like, you know, people subconsciously can relate to the paramount logo because they've seen it subconsciously in a movie and we're going to put out the logo for it. And the stars, people buy stars, which is a fair point. Like people like to kind of engage with signs and symbols they're familiar with. So we made it. Anyway, long story short, I woke up on Instagram one time and I see my Twitter blowing off and I'm seeing, I think it was Clint, he said something like black on black crime. Again, I'm thinking, who's this guy? I'm checking the tweets, kind of worked out, and I, in all fairness, I could see the resemblance. Gone on my Instagram, as I said before, checked my DMs, he's DM'd me before. So I've gone back and I'm thinking, first of all, you was a fan at one point. If you had a problem, you DM me then, so why don't you DM me now and say, yo, brother, you're like, yo, brother, what is this? Like, this looks like my thing. If he would have, I'm a reasonable person, so I would have said, yeah, you're right. But the inspiration was from Bape, so, but I can understand why you think it looks like yours. I would have took it down. I'm in the business of copying anyone, and that's clear. I have full respect for his thing. Like, I think his marketing skills are genius. And that's another thing. In the same breath from being compared to somebody, and in the same breath from being criticized for making clothes not for the culture no more, so make your mind up which one is it. Am I either European and more stylistic, or I'm trying to compete with Benjart, Trapstar, Cortez? It doesn't make sense.
The people enjoy it. Like, the fans enjoy it. I think, to be honest, though, it is a bit of a sticky one because it's like, obviously, I respect the fact that you already acknowledge where that similarity come from. You've already taken ownership for that.
Of course, I was pissed when I realized. But like I said, like I'm at the time I'm like 31. I don't know what Cortez is. I think it was a new brand at the time. Right?
Yeah. That's understandable. You understand that. But then also as well, it's weird because say if he wanted to hit you just to message you about that privately, maybe he might have felt in the moment that he couldn't because you probably hadn't engaged before. And he said black on black crime.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
But but I don't think black on black crime is that crazy. But I can feel how you took it as well. It's not the worst thing you could have said, if that makes sense. Like, he could have come out and been like, oh, you lot are copying me, boom, boom, boom.
You know what?
Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, if he would have copied me, I would have been probably less defended because it would have been, all right, fair enough. But for me, when someone says black on black crime, that's kind of like saying I'm trying to take off your plate. And if anybody knows me, if you ask Mikey, he's called my phone and asked for DHL rates to get them down. Can I plug him? Yeah. Benji Arts called, Drones called me, said, yo, do you have a jean supplier? Yeah, send him the supplier. Krept come to my yard for his Nala and I've gave him game. Clearly, all I've been trying to do is give people knowledge and show people the path, because opening a store on Oxford Street with no investments, no funding, no nothing, and being profitable for 10 years straight, there's got to be something in that.
Yeah, what I'm getting from it as well is that you take your craft and your business too seriously to kind of entertain that kind of statement in public, basically.
Yeah, and I understand, like I said, man, I'm an easy target because, like I said, everything stems around money, women, style, and all of that. So if people can attack me, they'll attack me because I make them feel insecure on all fronts.
Are you the biggest black-owned fashion house in the UK?
On paper, yeah, but I don't think it really matters, does it?
No, it does in respect to what you're talking about in terms of like how people may see.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm a man of facts, not speculation. So factually, yeah, for sure. But forget black aside, even in general, if we're talking about like ownership and equity value, race aside, yeah, especially being privately owned.
You seem like a serious, disciplined man. Like, obviously, I know for a fact that I've heard you say you don't really go out much partying. You hate spending money on alcohol.
Yeah.
So in a year, how many times do you go out?
Once, twice.
I invited you to the gala before.
I didn't even see that, you know.
No, I reckon you're sorry for I ain't going out.
Nah, I didn't see that though. I'll come to the next one, innit?
But, oh yeah, no, you gotta be there.
But you know, in London, if I go out, it's 10 Gs, you understand?
Yeah.
And I don't even drink. So I'm there copping big bills to for what, you understand? I'm tired.
So you don't drink, you don't party. So what do you do for fun? Well, and I'm not suggesting what you do is wrong at all, actually. I'm just trying to understand. What do you do for fun? Like, what's the fun?
You know what's funny, yeah? Because people always say this to me and I'm like, yo, this is the thing. How I live my life with simplicity in my life is fun to me.
Yeah, but you could do that for free, though.
I know, but this is the whole point. I think people have this connotation of you're making money to do X, Y, and Z. Yeah. I'm making money just to sleep peacefully and never have to think about money again. And not only that, as a man, we have to think about way down the line. So, I'm 32 now, as much as, you know, you're only young once, you got a long life to live. And as men, we live through our family anyway. We live through women and children, do you understand? So,
but have you ever been lit once?
What do you mean? Like, mash up?
Lit. Mash up is the extreme end of lit.
When I go on holiday, I do. But whilst I'm in London, this is work. This is my place of work.
And you don't go on holiday often either?
Twice a year.
Twice a year. Yeah. For how long?
10 days at a time.
10 days at a push. I can only go away for like 4 days max. Really? And I start getting anxiety.
I'm always working though, that's the thing. So even if I'm holiday, my routine kind of remains the same in the day. So I'll wake up, go to the gym, get on my laptop, and then obviously depending on what time zone I'm in, once the staff have finished work, I'm active.
What kind of experiences have you had that you can comfortably speak about that you only know or find out once you've reached a certain level of success or what people actually deem to be a certain level of success? It might not even be success to you.
Success for me is happiness, and I'm happy, and I'm calm. And I think me and my friend always say, my biggest achievement is that I can remain sane at my position. Because obviously, give most men this type of money or whatever, they're gonna be moving mad. They're gonna be power abusers. They're gonna be buying people effectively or making it all about them ego, themselves. And also, my friends also say to me that why they respect me so much is because I'm still the same as I was when I was a kid. I feel like when you're a calm person and you've always got your stuff together or you always seem to have the answers, I think everybody treats you as if you're superhuman, like you don't feel nothing. It's very rare that people actually check in and go, how are you? It's always, they always want something. They always wanna, can you help me with this? Can you give me some advice on that? Can I have some money? And again, like I said, as a man, and I'm all good with this, that's cool. But every now and again, I'm like, damn, like people think, even my staff sometimes, they think they don't, because I handle stress so well and I've always seemed to be calm, composed, have the answer, and everything always goes in an upward trajectory, they think that that just comes like naturally. So they don't ever think, you know what, he could be mad stressed today, let me just try and make his life a bit easier. Or I'm always the carrier of someone else's burden. And I feel like when you don't complain, people think that you're superhuman.
So who's been your biggest support then?
My solitude, to be honest. I know that sounds weird, but why, I guess, recluse is because that time alone in my own head solves a lot of, I can rationalize everything. And again, I feel like to stay sane at this level, you have to have a high level of empathy. You have to understand why people behave the way they do, because I think there's times where you can take it personally. Even going back to what you said about the online, I understand why people behave this way. They're mad, you know, they're angry at the position, and I understand why people don't see the other side, because they grew up self-centered. They didn't grow up being raised necessarily by parents who said, ask the other side first, or be selfless. I think we're in survival mode. And again, the economy doesn't help. Everyone's in survival mode and they're selfish. They don't consider other people's feelings or situation.
Yeah, what do you have left to achieve?
Everything. In terms of like business and finances, I never ever set goals like that, to be honest. And achievement, it comes from, not too dissimilar from what I just said, is through your family, you understand. I've sacrificed myself now for the last 10 years. So my present family, my mom, my dad, etc., they don't ever have to think about money ever again. When I have wife and kids, they don't ever have to worry about the things that I had to worry about growing up, or, you know, in my 20s, early 20s, you know what I'm saying, about money struggles, or not even that, just like the mental side of it. I know that whatever someone's gone through, I'm not saying I have the answer, but I can give you good guidance.
Yo, so look, I want to go over some of your tweets.
All right.
If your man sells e-com courses, get a new one.
100.
Frauds in motion, lives in Dubai, put 7 or 8 figures in their bio, drives a Urus, has a Rolex GMT.
Have you got a Rolex GMT?
I do, I've got a few.
I'm joking.
But not on today. Shows bags from shopping trips.
Mm-hmm.
Post Spotify screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
But company's house says you're loss-making.
Facts.
That's half of Twitter nowadays.
Bro, this is my point.
What have you got against GMTs? You don't fuck with the GMT?
No, I do, but not with all of that.
Not with all this.
All of that mixed in. And again, this is what I was saying before. Everyone's just fronting. And I have no issues with man stretching himself a little bit, but like, the problem is, and what offends me, is the damage it does to people who look up to you.
What's your favorite watch that you own? Because I'm a watch fanatic, you know? And I see you got a nice piece on today. What is it, a Frank Mirror?
Nah, JLC, rate me. Rate me. Yeah, Jäger Lecouture, reversal. I said Frank Mirror, you know. Rate me.
I just saw the corner of it. I didn't see the whole tray.
The reversal thing.
That is crazy. Hold on, let me get that on the camera. So is that your favorite one, this one here?
Yeah. I think it's just like classy and clean. But I don't even wear watches, too tough, to be honest. I sometimes just have to like pull one out just to make it make sense.
What's your take on crypto?
US dollar is weak. Inflation is high, so it makes sense. But you know what's funny? I think it was like 2 years ago when I was on holiday, and I just saw all the men with Bitcoin chains, and I was thinking. And then I remember going back on holiday to the same places like a couple of years later. I didn't see nobody.
Of course,
it is. The beach clubs were empty. The restaurants were empty. Like no Bitcoin holders anymore.
What's your favorite luxury brand?
Bottega Veneta, no doubt. I think it's classy, clean, logo-less, just like, you know, it's just the silhouettes are calm. The quality is always top tier.
What designer would you have loved to design for you?
Obviously, RIP Virgil. I'm sure he wouldn't have wanted to design for me, but yeah, he was the truth. He died, what, 3-4 years ago now? It's almost like, look at Off-White. Off-White's not done, but pretty much done now. And it goes to show, man, like, people say they support you, but when you're dead, they don't support you. It's almost like, and that's why I said, going back to the start, who cares what people think? Like, you're dying, no one gives a fuck, do you understand? So, as long as your family's good and they love you and they remember you, that's all that matters.
Fucking hell. You're going to get drunk one time this year just to, like, you know, just be lit one day this year, man.
I'm lit, man. That's what I'm saying. Every day internally, I feel lit.
Say no more.
Every day.
Nah, it's been an honor and pleasure to meet you and have a conversation with you and actually get into the mind and inner workings of how you've been able to successfully build one of the biggest fashion brands, if not the biggest, from somebody who's English. And I feel like, you know, whether people or not take the time to listen or get to know the man behind some of the savage tweets sometimes, it's up to them, but you don't give a shit. Anyway.
Bro, you know what it is in this world? Everything's so fake that when you're real for 1 second, people get offended. And at the end of the day, the proof is in the numbers. The proof is in the man. Those who are set to achieve great things or have a different mentality to others will take it in and go, you know what? The man's not crazy. He's just saying what needs to be said.
So what do you think of Kanye West then?
He might have gone a little bit too far.